Chapter 2. Names and Numbers. The conviction that the name of a thing contains the essence of its being is one of the oldest and most fundamental of magical beliefs. Names are used to identify things. Instead of reciting a long and detailed description of the characteristics of an animal, it is more convenient to say, "This is a frog." But to distinguish between the name frog and the creature itself is a modern and sophisticated habit of mind. For the magical thinker, the name sums up all the characteristics which make the animal what it is, and so the name is the animal's identity. If it did not have this name, but some other, toad, perhaps, it would not be what it is, but something different. This is the root of the magical theory that the name of a thing is a miniature image of it, which can be used as a substitute for the thing itself. A man can be injured as effectively by working on this miniature image of himself, his name, as by working on a figure of him in clay or wax. And when a wax image is used, it is often baptized with the name of the victim it represents. A classical method of killing or injuring an enemy is to write his name on a piece of lead, wax, or pottery, add an appropriate curse, and bury it. Many of these curses have been found in tombs and temples in Greece, Asia Minor, and Italy. As the lead grows cold, one says, so grow he cold. Sometimes a nail was driven through the name to pierce the enemy. I nail his name, that is, himself. Some of the curses were connected with lawsuits. The name of an opponent in the courts was buried to stifle his slippery tongue. Others were intended to strike the victim with disease. I put quartan fever on Aristion to the death. An early outgrowth of the magical theory of names was the concept of the real name. If any man can be subjected to magical influence simply by using his name, life becomes altogether too dangerous. And it must also have been observed that knowing a thing's name did not actually give a magician power over it. This was explained by saying that the ordinary names of things are merely convenient labels. The name which enshrines the essence of a creature's identity is its real name, which is secret. In many primitive societies, a man has two names. One is for ordinary, everyday use, and the other, his real name, is kept secret. It may be so secret that the man himself does not know it. It was whispered into his ear by his mother when he was a baby. If a sorcerer discovers the real name, he can destroy the man, for instance, by magically enticing the name into leaves or straw, which he burns or scatters. As the name is turned to ashes in the fire or blown away on the wind, the victim weakens and dies. His real name is his identity, and as it disintegrates, so does he. The real names of gods, angels, and demons were also kept secret for the same reason. Plutarch said that in early times the name of the guardian deity of Rome was carefully concealed. It was forbidden to ask this god's name, or anything else about it, even whether it was male or female, probably because the Romans were afraid that enemies could nullify the god's power, or even charm the god away from them if its name was known. In the Bible, the rider on a white horse of Revelation, who is called Faithful and True, has another secret name. His eyes were as a flame of fire, and on his head were many crowns, and he had a name written that no man knew but he himself. The angel who visited Manoah, the father of Samson, refused to reveal his name. Why askest thou thus after my name, seeing it is secret? The angel who wrestled with Jacob also refused to tell his name, presumably because he thought Jacob could use it to defeat him. Jewish commentators believe that this angel's real name was Samael. He was the terrible angel of death and poison, whose name means venom of God. The belief that the name of a thing is the thing lies behind the biblical habit of using God's name to mean God. God says, "He shall build a house for my name," meaning for me, and tells Moses to obey the angel who goes before the Israelites because my name is in him, meaning I am in him. St. Paul says that God raised Christ above every name that is named, meaning above every being that exists. An Egyptian legend describes how the goddess Isis tried to capture the power of the sun god Ra and reign supreme over all the world. To do this, she had to discover his real name. Ra was old, and he dribbled and slobbered. Isis collected some of his dropped spittle, which magically retained its connection with his body, and mixed it with earth to make a venomous snake. The snake stung Ra, and the god was in agony. When every remedy had been tried without success, he agreed that Isis should take his name. I consent that Isis shall search into me, and that my name shall pass from me into her. In taking his name, Isis was really taking his identity. By herself becoming Ra, she could exercise his supreme power. There are many survivals of the old belief in the magical significance of names. Parents take trouble about choosing a name for a child, often with the underlying feeling that the name will affect the child's character. To help them choose, books and magazines list the meanings of names. In Jewish tradition, still frequently observed, a child should never be named for a relative who is alive, because the relative will die if his name is taken for the child. People who enter religious orders take new names to show that as new men and women, they are beginning a new life. So do people who join occult societies, and witches sometimes took new names on entering the devil's service. Beyond this, most of us still tend to make the deep-rooted magical assumption that words have meaning independently of the way in which they are used, and that terms like beauty or democracy are the names of things whose characteristics are independent of our opinions about them. It is only in recent times that this assumption has been questioned by philosophers. One of the most interesting survivals of the magical theory of names is modern numerology. A respectable numerologist would not attempt to destroy you by means of your name, but he does believe that your name contains the essence of you. If it is analyzed according to a set of traditional rules, it reveals your character and your destiny. The fact that your name distinguishes you from other people is the basis of the numerologist's conviction that it enshrines your individuality. But anyone who sets out to discover the true meanings of names runs into the difficulty that the multitudes of different people in the world have multitudes of different names. The task of analyzing all these names is hopeless unless they can be reduced to a reasonably small number of types. This is done by turning all names into numbers. Only the numbers from 1 to 9 are used, sometimes with 11 and 22 added. And this gives the numerologists a manageable quantity of categories to work on.